ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। हरे कृष्ण। विद द ब्लेसिंग्स ऑफ सीनियर डिवोटीज आई वुड लाइक टू स्पीक ऑन उद्धव गीता। सो आई हैव टू कवर चैप्टर नंबर 19-22 एंड द स्पेसिफिक वर्स आई हैव टू फोकस ऑन इज वर्स नंबर 2nd ऑफ 21st चैप्टर। So before we go to today's verse, I would just like to speak in summary the connection with the previous chapter and the summary of all these four chapters. So we heard, Shesha Prabhu gave class on the Varnashram system yesterday. And before that, Uddhava had asked in chapter number 17 a question to Lord Krishna that how can all human beings achieve devotional service to Krishna by performing prescribed duties? So in response to that question, Krishna explained the four ashrams, Brahmachari, Grastha, Vanaprastha and Sannyas. And yesterday we heard a specific description of Grastha ashram, which Shesha Prabhu connected to all the ashrams. And that verse said that the association of children, wife, relatives and friends is just like the brief meeting of travelers. So that's what we heard yesterday. So I just recall a similar verse on the theme of a traveler, a soul being a traveler, in the second canto of Bhagavatam, that says, Dhautatma Purusha Krishna, Pada Moolam Namunchati, Mukta Sarva Pariklesha, Pantha Swasharanam Yatha. That when a living entity is thoroughly cleansed, then he never leaves the lotus feet of Krishna. And that experience is just like a traveler who has been tired of the long journey reaches his home. So this theme of traveler, the soul being a traveler, is reoccurring in various cantos of Srimad Bhagavatam. And we will see the same thing more in today's description. So at the end of chapter number 18, Lord Krishna concluded that one who has purified his existence by execution of his prescribed duties, who fully understands my supreme position and who is endowed with spiritual and realized knowledge, very soon achieves me. My dear Saintly Uddhava, I have now described to you, just as you inquired, the means by which my devotee, perfectly engaged in his prescribed duty, can come back to me, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Krishna has described the method of achieving Krishna by following the prescribed duties. And today's chapter, chapter number 19, he begins talking about the Jnana. So what we'll do today is talk about the Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga and Bhakti Yoga. So he just finished the Karma Yoga part in the previous yesterday and today. So chapter number 19 begins with, so let's read the summary of chapter number 19 from Srimad Bhagavatam. I'll keep reading. This chapter describes how those who practice speculative knowledge eventually gives up the method, whereas the pure devotees remain engaged in devotional service eternally. Also described are the different practices of yogis, beginning with Yama. The Supreme Lord Sri Krishna stated to Uddhava, one who is actually wise, who knows the truth of the self and possesses transcendental insight, rejects this world of dualities and the so-called knowledge meant for facilitating enjoyment of it. He instead engages himself in trying to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Master of all. This is pure Bhakti Yoga. The transcendental knowledge is greater than such ordinary pious activities as chanting of mantras, but pure devotional service is greater than even knowledge. After this, Lord Krishna, requested by Sri Uddhava to describe in full detail pure transcendental knowledge and devotional service, related the same instruction that the greatest of Vaishnavas, Bhishma Dev, gave on these topics to Sri Yudhishthir on the occasion of Battle of Kurukshetra. Following this, after being asked about Yama and the other practices of yoga, the Lord enumerated the 12 kinds of Yama, beginning with non-violence, and the 12 kinds of Niyama, beginning with bodily cleanliness. So in this chapter, Lord Krishna describes about knowledge and also a little bit about Bhakti Yoga. And he related the same instructions as Bhishma Dev gave to Yudhishthir at the end of Kurukshetra War when he was confused. when he was morose that because of him so many people died and he was not pacified by Lord Krishna also. And then Lord Krishna gave a chance to Bhishma Dev to speak on the transcendental knowledge. So that is 19th chapter. So there are some interesting verses in the 19th chapter which I will discover. One of the verses is verse number 3, which says, those who have achieved complete perfection through philosophical and realized knowledge recognize my lotus feet to be the supreme transcendental object. Thus the learned transcendentalist is most dear to me, and by his perfect knowledge he maintains me in happiness. Prestham. So, Krishna says that the ultimate perfection of knowledge is to come to the point of realizing lotus feet of Lord Krishna. And in the prayer, Uddhava also says very beautifully, that my dear Lord, for one who is being tormented by the terrible path of birth and death and is constantly overwhelmed by the threefold miseries, I do not see any possible shelter other than your lotus feet, which are just like a refreshing umbrella that pours down showers of delicious nectar. So, the thing I am trying to say that a soul is considered with a traveler and he is traveling through birth and death, the cycle of birth and death, and trying to achieve his ultimate goal in life, that is the shelter of Lord Krishna's lotus feet. And here, the lotus feet of Lord Krishna is compared with an umbrella, which is a very beautiful analogy. The umbrella performs two functions. One is that it protects the soul from the threefold miseries of this material world. And second, it also showers nourishment from within. And that gives the nourishment to the soul and it refreshes him. And that's why he keeps on continuing on this path. So in the purport, Maharaj says, when the incarnation of Godhead, that is the verse number 9. Yeah, you can go there, that would be nice. So in the purport, it is said that when the incarnation of Godhead Prithu Maharaj were crowned, the demigods Vayu presented him with an umbrella that constantly sprayed fine particles of water. The Lord's two lotus feet are similarly compared here to a wonderful umbrella that produces a constant shower of delicious nectar, the bliss of Krishna consciousness. Normally, speculative analytical knowledge terminates in an impersonal conception of the absolute truth. But the so-called bliss of merging into impersonal spiritual existence can never be compared to the bliss of Krishna consciousness, as stated here by Sri Uddhava. So what is that nectar which Uddhava is talking about, which pours from lotus feet of Lord Krishna? As the soul is tolerating this material existence and trying to progress on the spiritual path, and Krishna's lotus feet protects him and also gives him nectar. So what is that nectar? That answer is given in the next verse, if you would like to go there. That says that, O Almighty Lord, please be merciful and uplift this hopeless living entity who has fallen into dark hole of material existence. Where the snake of time has bitten him, in spite of such abominable condition, this poor living entity has tremendous desire to relish the most insignificant material happiness. Please save me, my Lord, by pouring down the nectar of your instructions, which awaken one to the spiritual freedom. So, that's what Uddhava is talking about. So, he is requesting Lord Krishna to speak more and more about the bhakti and transcendental knowledge. And that gives the nourishment to his devotees. As Arjuna has also said, when Arjuna went to Dwarka after the war of Kurukshetra and he found that all the Krishna's relative and the Krishna himself has left this planet, then he was heartbroken and he came back and with great difficulty he spoke to Yudhishthira Maharaj, and then he remembered the instructions of Lord Krishna on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, and those instructions are the one which gave him strength. And that is what Uddhava is also requesting Lord Krishna, because he's also about to leave this world, and Uddhava is also requesting Lord Krishna to speak this nectarine instructions which will be the sustenance for his devotees. So, in this course of conversation, Lord Krishna talks about four types of evidence a devotee should use to gain transcendental knowledge. So, to just make it a little interactive, I will ask you, so what are the different types of evidence we see to gain knowledge? We have seen three kinds. We have always been talking about three kinds of sources of knowledge. So, what are those three? Pratyaksha. Okay. Pratyaksha means direct experience. And? Anuman. Anuman means by process of logically reaching a conclusion by deduction. And? And Shabda. that is approaching authority of Vedas. So these are three sources of knowledge we have been talking about in our preaching. But Lord Krishna here gives the fourth one, that is the traditional wisdom. So he talks about four evidences a devotee should use. Traditional wisdom, which is established, which we can say that from the knowledge of sages, which is also a part of Vedas actually, but extended, which is mixed with the experience of great people. So at the end of this chapter, Lord Krishna says, so Lord Krishna in this chapter has described about pious and impious work, about the dualities of this world, and he has defined various terms. At the end of all this, Krishna says that there is no need for more elaborate descriptions of these good and bad qualities, since to constantly see good and bad itself is a bad quality. The best quality is to transcend the material good and evil. So here Krishna first described that how one can discriminate in this material world between what is good and what is bad, and what is favorable, what is not favorable. At the end, Krishna says that guna dosha drishir dosho, that to see guna and dosh, both is a dosh, both is not good. So one has to transcend both seeing the good and bad eventually. So hearing this, Uddhava asks some challenging question to Krishna in the beginning of 20th chapter. So Uddhava says that, my dear Krishna, you are the Supreme Lord, and thus the Vedic literatures consisting of positive and negative instructions constitute your own order. Such literatures focus upon the good and bad qualities. And in the fifth verse, Uddhava says, my dear Lord, the distinction between the distinction observed between piety and sin comes from your own Vedic knowledge and does not arise by itself. If the same Vedic literature subsequently nullifies such distinction between piety and sin, there will certainly be confusion. So this is a very logical question, that if Krishna at the end is saying that one should not see good and bad, then why are they there in the Vedic literature, which is filled with such description? The whole Vedic scripture is filled with what is pious and what is impious, and how to avoid the sin and how to do the pious work. So here Lord Krishna says, in the sixth verse, my dear Uddhava, because I desire that human beings may achieve perfection, I have presented three paths of advancement: the path of knowledge, the path of work, and the path of devotion. Besides these three, there is absolutely no other means of elevation. So now Krishna is beginning to explain that why he has described first good and bad, and why at the end he is asking us to stop doing the discrimination. So first Krishna describes what is this three paths and whom are they meant for. In the next verse, Krishna says, among these three paths, Jnana Yoga, the path of philosophical speculation, is recommended for those who are disgusted with material life and are thus detached from ordinary fruitive activities. Those who are not disgusted with material life, having many desires yet to fulfill, should seek perfection through the path of Karma Yoga. And the next verse, Krishna says, if somehow or other, by good fortune, one develops faith in hearing and chanting my glories, such a person, being neither very disgusted with nor attached to material life, should achieve perfection through the path of loving devotion to me. So here Krishna has summarized all three paths, and he has also said whom are they meant for. So we can, of course, we are all following devotional service path. But in general, it is not easy to follow devotional service. Seeing this, it might seem that devotional service is easier than the Jnana Yoga, because Jnana Yoga involves so much hard austerities, no sense gratification, so much restrictions. And the devotional service is like a path of balanced life. Yuktahar, Viharasa, Karmashu. Krishna talks about the balance in the Bhagavad Gita also. So it seems like devotional service path is the easier one, but why it is highest? Actually, it is not the easiest one. So first, let's talk about Karma Yoga path is, of course, the lower one, because here a person is attached to sense gratification and he tries to enjoy the sense gratification, and he takes shelter of Vedas and their instructions and follow the prescription. In this way, he gets a connection with the Vedic scriptures, with some higher authority, and that cleanses him, that purifies him in due course of time. And he comes to the understanding of his own true nature, that he is not this material body and he is soul. And at the end of that perfection, a person comes to understand that he is soul, but he is part and parcel of Krishna. And he is not just an independent soul. There is a supreme self, that is Lord Krishna himself. And then the Bhakti Yoga process begins. So Bhakti Yoga is tough because it's very hard to surrender one's false ego. That's even, I mean, it's harder than doing the austerities. It's much easier to do austerities. For sake of our ego, we undergo so much difficulties to prove a point. Sometimes when we become very strong and adamant, then we can undergo any difficulties to just prove our ego. So that's what is similar kind of feeling is there, that one want to feel great, one want to feel that he is great, and then one keeps on following this Jnana Yoga without referring to Supreme Personality of Godhead, just seeing oneself, just seeing the self. But that knowledge is not complete, because the complete knowledge will be seen when one sees self in relation with the Super Soul, with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that surrendering of ego is the most difficult, and that makes the Bhakti Yoga most difficult. But one who is humble, it is the most easiest process and very natural process. And because Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that sukham kartam avyayam, that it's easily performed, it's so much full of bliss. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has made it even more blissful. Three path, the Karma Yoga. So all these three paths, knowledge, Karma Yoga and devotional service, they constitute of basic elements of work, worship, meditation and knowledge. So these four elements are found in all three paths, but depending on the predominance of one, that particular path is known by that term. Like in the Karma Yoga also, there is some worship, some ritualistic ceremony, some work, some knowledge is involved, some meditation involved. But it is mainly about fulfilling your desires, but doing it in an authentic manner, under the guidance of Vedas. Yes, Prabhu. And okay, Karma Yoga also has different flavors. At the lowest stage, at the boundary beyond Karma Yoga, is Karmakandis, those who simply want to enjoy. And at the lower stage of Karma Yoga is those who are what is that called? Sakam Karma Yogis, where they are interested in their own sense gratification, and they also understand that it is a duty to offer to Krishna. Yagyarthat karmano anyatra lokayam karma bandhana. So they offer some results to Lord Krishna. So, but their heart is still at enjoying. And slowly by doing this process of offering, they are cleansed and they rise to the upper Karma Yoga, that is Nishkam Karma Yoga, and that merges into Bhakti Yoga eventually. So we are, technically speaking, we are not doing, we are of course doing Karma Yoga and not even that properly. But because it is the instruction of Prabhupada, what we are doing, and Prabhupada is an Acharya and he has given us a path, so we are following his words, so it is Bhakti Yoga. Because of the strength of Prabhupada, what we are doing is Bhakti Yoga. Anil? Yes, please.
The difference which I felt between Karma Yogis and the Bhakti Yogis, in Bhakti Yogi you chant your round yourself and Karma Yogi ask a Brahmin to chant their rounds.
Yeah. Yeah, very nice. So what we are doing is under the instruction of our spiritual master, and thus whatever we are doing is Bhakti Yoga. And in between of this 20th chapter, Krishna also emphasized the importance of human birth. He says that the residents of both heaven and hell desire human birth on this earth's planet, because the human life facilitates the achievement of transcendental knowledge and love of Godhead, whereas neither heavenly nor hellish bodies efficiently provide such opportunities. So in this whole chapter, Krishna is emphasizing that how one should engage in one of these paths and eventually complete Bhakti Yoga, and how the human life is so important that only in this life we get this facility and we can exercise this in full. So, can we read the... Yes, Mataji? Yeah, but Yes, that's right. That's a definition of Karma Yoga and Bhakti Yoga. But what are we doing? I mean, I'm doing PhD and I know that I'm attached to do that. I'm attached to study, I'm attached to publish papers and get recognition. So that's my attachment. So, and at the same time, I'm trying to offer my work to Guru and Krishna. It is not pure. That's what I'm saying. That if it were pure, it were purely Bhakti Yoga. But I am agreeing, I am acknowledging that it is not a pure feeling right now. I am at a stage which is mixed feelings I have. I am also attached to the fruits. And at the same time, I also understand that I should dovetail it to Krishna's service. So it's a mixed feeling. And that's why it's not a pure Bhakti Yoga. So that's what I was trying to say. That he asked a question about what are we doing. So it depends on subject, on the individual person. So a person might be pure, then it's pure Bhakti Yoga. But for me, I can say that it's not pure. So I have that goal in mind and I'm trying to progress towards it. So that's why it's a mixed feeling right now. So can we read the summary of 20th chapter from the Narayani Mataji's book?
The human body is like a boat. Sri Gurudev is the helmsman, and the Lord's mercy is favorable breeze. If a person who has attained such a rare boat does not desire to cross the ocean of material existence, he is a killer of the soul.
Yeah, so that shloka says, Sa Atmaha. So such a person who doesn't desire to perfect his life and cross over this material existence, he is called Sa Atmaha, the killer of his own soul. So now I'll just touch upon some interesting verses in this chapter. And there's a quiz for you. Chapter 20. So when I was reading this chapter, I could find one-to-one correspondence with Bhagavad Gita. And this was very exciting to see because it gives us strength and faith that the same person is speaking both. And it gives more faith in the personality. It reveals more of a personal attribute of Krishna. I mean, Krishna, he's the same person who spoke Bhagavad Gita and the same person who is speaking Uddhava Gita. And we can see that how is he speaking very similar instructions. So I will just say the translation and you can tell me which verse in the Bhagavad Gita this is also given. Yeah. Damodar Prabhu, you can try answering last. So, whenever the mind being concentrated on the spiritual platform is suddenly deviated from its spiritual position, one should carefully bring it under the control of the self by following the prescribed means. Perfect. That is Bhagavad Gita 6th chapter 26th sloka. Yato yato nishalati manas chanchalam astiram tada tada nyam etad atmani eva vasam nayet. Whenever the mind wanders due to his flickering unsteady nature, one should withdraw it and bring it back under the control of the self. Prescribed means. Yeah, with whatever efforts means, yeah. So, now I'll say a verse. It is also in the Bhagavatam earlier cantos. The knot in the heart is pierced, all misgivings are cut to pieces, and the chain of fruitive action is terminated when I am seen as a supreme personality of Godhead. Vidyate hridaya granti chidinde sarva sanshaya chiyanti chasya karmani drashtaivat manishwari. So one different line in the two shlokas is that here it is said when I am seen as a supreme personality of Godhead, and there in the previous verse it says that when one sees the self as a master. Okay, so that verse I quoted is in the canto first, second chapter and verse number 21. So to see self as a master and to see supreme personality of Godhead everywhere is actually very related. They are not two different things. To see self also means to see the super soul. So when one sees sun, then only everything gets revealed. So seeing the super soul, seeing the Lord means to see the sun. And when the sun is arisen, then we can see our own self also. And then we can see everything in relation to our own self and the supreme Lord. So these two concepts are very same. Being self means we are not slave of three modes of material nature. So that is inspiring us to take control of our life and also inspiring us to see our relation with Supreme Self. So where do you find this in Gita? Everyone that can be Everything that can be achieved by fruitive activities, penance, knowledge, detachment, mystic yoga, charity, religious duties, and all other means of perfection is easily achieved by my devotee through loving service to me. This is a favorite. Okay. Okay, yeah. So those who have answered, they should not speak again until I'll ask them. Yeah. Yes, yes, Damodar Prabhu, you want to answer this? This is the shloka Krishna Kripa Prabhu cited few days back. Vedesu yagyesu tapesu chaiva. Okay. So let's summarize 20th chapter and move on to 21st chapter. So after describing Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga and Bhakti Yoga, Lord Krishna says in the beginning of 21st chapter, Krishna says that, yes, those who give up these methods for achieving me, which consists of devotional service, analytic philosophy and regulated execution of prescribed duties, and instead being moved by material senses, cultivate insignificant sense gratification, certainly undergoes this continual cycle of material existence. Yeah, 20, no, sorry, I'm sorry. Verse number 1. Yeah, so then Krishna warns that he has described these three paths in the previous chapter, and then he's saying that if one does not follow one of these paths, then he is simply lost in this material existence. And verse number 2 is today's verse. So let's focus on this. So let's read the shloka. Sway sway, I mean you can follow me. Sway sway,
sway, sway.
Each in his own. Adhikare, position, ya, such, nishtha, steadiness, sa, this, guna, piety, parikirtatai. Is declared to be viparyaya, the opposite to indeed dosha, impiety, syat, is ubhayo, of the two, esha, this, nishchaya, the definite conclusion. Sve-sve adhikare ya nishtha,
saguna parikirtita,
viparyayastu dosha syat, ubhayor esha nishchaya.
Saguna parikirtita,
sve sve adhikari yanishtha,
saguna parikirtita,
sve-sve-dikāri-yā-niṣṭhā,
sa-guṇā-parikīrtitā,
So, translation. Steadiness in one's own position is declared to be actual piety, whereas deviation from one's position is considered impiety. In this way, the two are definitely ascertained. So I'll read this.
I'm ready. In the previous verse, Lord Krishna explained that the path of spiritual progress begins with the working without fruitive desires, advances to the stage of realized spiritual knowledge and culminates in direct engagement in devotional service of the Lord. Here the Lord emphasizes that a conditioned soul should not artificially disrupt the natural evolution of his Krishna consciousness by deviating from those duties prescribed by the Lord himself. In the lower stages of human life, one is entangled in false identification with the gross material body and desires to execute material fruitive activities based on society, friendship and love. When such materialistic activities are offered in sacrifice to the Supreme Lord, one becomes situated in Karma Yoga.
By regulated service, one gradually gives up the gross bodily concept of life and advances to the stage of realization of spiritual knowledge, whereby one understands oneself to be an eternal spirit soul completely different from the material body and mind. Feeling relief from the pangs of materialism, one becomes very attached to one's spiritual knowledge. Thus one is situated in the stage of Jnana Yoga. As the candidate further advances on the spiritual path, he understands himself to be part and parcel of the Supreme Soul, the Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna. He then sees his conditional life as well as spiritual knowledge was obtained from the Personality of Godhead, who awards results of all types of activities, both pious and sinful. Let me the rest.
By directly engaging in the loving service of the Supreme Lord and understanding oneself to be the Lord's eternal servant, one's attachment evolves into pure love of Godhead. Thus, one first gives up the lower stage of attachment to the material body and then subsequently gives up attachment to cultivation of spiritual knowledge. This relieves one of the material life. Finally, one recognizes the Lord Himself as the resting place of one's eternal love and fully surrenders to God in full Krishna consciousness.
Lord Krishna explains in this verse that one who is still attached to the material body and mind cannot artificially give up the prescribed duties of Karma Yoga. In the same way, one who is spiritual, who is a spiritual neophyte, just beginning to realize the illusion of material life, should not artificially try to think of the Lord's intimate pastimes 24 hours a day, imitating the stage of prema bhakti. Rather, he should cultivate analytic knowledge of the material world, by which one gives up attachment to the material body and mind. In Srimad Bhagavatam, we find many analytic descriptions of the material world, and they can free the conditioned soul from false identification with matter. One who has achieved the perfect stage of love of Godhead, however, being freed from all gross and subtle attachments to the material world, may give up the lower stages of Karma Yoga and Jnana Yoga and engage oneself directly in the Lord's loving service.
In chapter 19, verse 45, Lord Krishna states, Guna dosha drishya dosha gunas tubya vrajatita. One should not see material good and evil within a devotee of the Lord. Indeed, one becomes pious by giving up such mundane conceptions. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur points out that occasionally a neophyte devotee may be polluted by association with those enthusiastically executing fruitive activities and mental speculations. Such devotees' religious activities may be affected by mundane tendencies. Similarly, an ordinary person who observes the exalted status of the pure devotee sometimes externally imitates the devotee's activities, considering himself to be on the same exalted platform of pure devotional service. These imperfect practitioners of bhakti yoga are not exempt from criticism, since their fruitive activities, mental speculation, and false prestige are material intrusions in the pure loving service of the Lord. The pure devotee engaged exclusively in the Lord's service should not be criticized, but a devotee whose devotional service is mixed with material qualities may be corrected so that he can rise to the platform of pure devotional service.
Innocent persons should not be misled by the mixed devotional service of those not engaged exclusively in the bhakti yoga system, but those unable to fully engage in Krishna consciousness should nevertheless not give up their regular prescribed duties, declaring them to be illusion. For example, one unable to fully engage in pure Krishna consciousness should not give up his family, considering it an illusion, for by doing so, he will fall into illicit sex life. Material piety, analytical knowledge of the material world must therefore be cultivated until one becomes, until one comes to the stage of direct practicing Krishna consciousness.
Thank you, Guru. So once Haridas Thakur was going by in a village and he saw a snake charmer playing his flute, what is that? Bean, whatever. The music and trying to play with the snakes. And seeing that scene, Haridas Thakur remembered Lord Krishna playing on the Kaliya and he started dancing like a madman. So, and he started dancing and everyone gathered around and everyone respected and praised him. And he got so much love and adoration from the public in general and from the snake charmer because they all understood that this person is a pure devotee of Krishna and he is dancing because he's remembering Lord Krishna playing on the Kaliya. And then after that, he came to his senses and he got up and started walking. So seeing this, there was another man who thought, oh, this is a very easy way to get respect. So when the next time snake charmer was playing, he came and he started dancing like a madman. And seeing him dancing, everyone came and started beating him with a stick. So what I am trying to say here is that one should not become a pretender. Krishna also said in the shloka and also in the whole theme, Krishna is saying that one should act according to one's level of realization. One should act according to one's position. And that's what this shloka is saying. The real piety is to be steady in one's own position and not to try to pretend the other stages. Sve sve adhikare ya nishta. One should act according to one's adhikar. A very similar shloka is also found in the previous chapter. Sve sve adhikari ya nishta sa guna parikirtatai karmanam jati ashuddhanam anena nyama krita. So there Krishna says, it is firmly declared that the steady adherence of transcendentals to their respective spiritual position constitute real piety and that sin occurs when a transcendentalist neglects his prescribed duty. One who adopts this standard of piety and sin, sincerely desiring to give up all past association with sense gratification, is able to subdue materialistic activities which are by nature impure. So what is sin and what is piety is something which is a very relative thing. For somebody who is addicted to eating meat and if we tell him that and then he's supposed to come to, and he once comes to temple, and he's eating a lot of prasadam, and then we tell him, oh no, you should not try to enjoy prasadam, you should try to respect prasadam, and you should honor prasadam. So we are giving a kind of instruction which is not belonging to that person's stage. He is still at the lower level, he is still eating meat. So we should cut down the mistake according to the order of magnitudes. For that person to eat lot of prasadam is good. It is not, and for a devotee who has already practiced for tens and twenties of years, and then he has come to understand the position of Lord Krishna and he is trying to achieve love of God, then for him it is prescribed that yes, he can try to be more regulated in his enjoyment, in his daily activities, and he can cut down prasadam. So for him it is good, but for the person who is still, you know, at the lower stage, for him it is all good to eat prasadam in any quantity, that does not matter. So similarly here, a person who is still addicted to enjoyment, for him to talk about Krishna prem is all something which is very foreign for him, for his standard. So for him it is good that he comes, that he enjoys but offers a part of it to Lord Krishna, follow karma yoga. So one perfect that stage, then he comes to the understanding of knowledge. And at that stage, it is recommended that one should study the different elements of this material universe and try to understand the temporary nature and do the philosophical speculations. And this is all good for him because he is trying to be detached from the material world. And he should focus on the dualities and the temporary nature of this material world. And for him, it is good to do this analysis. And once he becomes firmly established in that, then for him it is recommended that now he should stop doing all this jugglery and come to the point of serving Lord Krishna. So the analogy is given that a person lost in the forest refers to a forest map to come out of the forest. And once he's out of the forest, he doesn't need the map anymore. Now he is already at his home with Lord Krishna. So similarly, all the Vedic instructions, all the Vedas, they are dealing with this material world and how we can get out of this material world. And so they are very important if we are really at that level. And we should follow them. But Krishna encourages even Arjuna that Tray Gunya Vishya Vedanis Tray Gunya Bhavarjuna, that whole Vedic knowledge deals with the three modes of material nature, and eventually you should become beyond all this. So, but we should not do it artificially. We should not do it if we are not ready to do that. So we should follow systematically with full steadiness according to our own realization. That is what the shloka is saying. So what is piety and what is sin is a very relative term. I'll just give an example. To barge into somebody's house, you know, to break the door is like a sinful act, is like a thief. But to do that when there is an emergency, there's a fire in the house, and you are doing it to save somebody, that's a heroic act, that's a very pious act. So what is pious and what is sin cannot be ascertained absolutely. It's all relative things, and that's what Krishna is saying, that eventually you should give up seeing guna and dosh, and you should rise above from seeing this duality and come up absolutely to Krishna's lotus feet. Yes, Prabhu?
So basically, we are suggesting that before we start, so we should analyze the material world. This is what the instruction is like. We should analyze, analytically study. So which means we should study the shastras nicely.
Yeah, we should apply our intelligence in studying the shastras and do the analysis and see different viewpoints. That is all very healthy for us.
And then we should act on higher levels of.
Yeah, and by doing this, the temporary nature of this material world will be ingrained in our heart, and we will be detached from this material world because we have understood it so well, and from that level it will be easy for us to surrender to Krishna. So this process is recommended. I mean, it is really recommended that we should apply our intelligence in understanding the scriptures and do.
But why was Prabhupada's mood like, you know, just chant and be happy? Like,
no, Prabhupada's mood was not just that. Prabhupada said he wants, I don't know exact quote, that he wants every one of his followers to be very intelligent, to be able to see the different viewpoint in the scriptures and be able to present it. That is also Prabhupada's mood. And then, so the chanting is the thing which is the real substance actually. Chanting is the thing which is the thing which will give us love of God. That is true. But the chanting also should be done, if we do chanting with proper understanding, with proper mood of surrender to Krishna, then it will be more faster. And this analysis helps us to get the proper mood. So chanting is the main process, no doubt about that. Nobody can question that. But all this process brings us to the point we can chant better. We can really chant. We can have real faith that this material world is not our place. This material enjoyment is not something which will make me happy. So this conclusions can be arrived by doing this analysis. And then chanting, then we can focus on chanting properly. So everything has a place in our life. Yes, Prabhu?
I believe that Prabhupada also said whoever sits in Vyasasan should be able to defeat all other philosophies.
Yeah.
So basically we're expected to be very expert in analyzing all the philosophies.
Yes, Prabhu? Yeah. So your question? Yeah, one should not hold on to that distinction, that differentiation for eternity. One should do that only for sake of progress, just like Madhyam Adhikari. One should distinguish what is good, what is favorable for his spiritual consciousness, for his Krishna consciousness, and what is not favorable. Like, we should be associated with everyone without any regulation or should we find out that who is more favorable from Krishna consciousness? So that distinction always helps us to progress. And when we will naturally reach that stage that we will no more see this distinction, because we will see Krishna everywhere. So that stage we don't have to imitate artificially. So we should do this analysis as a Madhyam Adhikari. So that is, but we should not be attached to it eternally. That is recommended. Because this distinction is not absolute. It is all changing in different circumstances. So that's what it is said.
Like, As there's two verses here that indicate you should stay in your position, you shouldn't go to somebody else's position. Also in Bhagavad Gita, there's two verses where Krishna says you should stay in your position. One of them is 334. Let's say that goes Shreyasvadharma Viguna Paradhamat Svanustitat. Svadharma Nidanam Shreya Parodharma Bhayavaha. It says that it's better to do your duties imperfectly than to do another's duties perfectly. And actually, it's better to meet destruction in the course of your own duty, for to follow another's path is dangerous. And then there's a verse almost exactly the same, 1847. So it's also a very important point that he's actually mentioning it twice in the Gita and twice in the Bhagavatam. So something serious. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes, Prabhu? Okay.
Regarding yesterday, Shesha Prabhu was saying that the process of sadhana bhakti is practicing, and by that one revives his natural position. So how would you distinguish between practicing and following something artificially?
Practicing and following something artificially.
Yeah, like so the one should remain in one's position and not follow, go beyond one's realization. So that is doing something artificially.
Oh.
And sadhana bhakti is practicing. So how would you distinguish between the two?
This practicing is recommended. Okay, following something artificially means you are acting as if you are expert in that, like the Prakriti, what is it? Sajiyas, that they imitate, that they are at the level of Krishna Prem and they are trying to enact that bhava. So that is Sajiya mentality. But trying to follow rules and regulations is a Vaidhi bhakti. So it is a recommended process in the scripture. Krishna also given the yoga ladder in the 12th chapter. And if you cannot remain at the stage, then we should practice. So because we are not able to remain at the stage, so we are being honest and we are trying to practice according to Krishna's instruction and the Guru's instructions. So it is not imitating. Because we are acknowledging that we are practicing it. So that's why it is not imitation. I mean, do you want to add something?
The point of this verse is about being steady in one's own position, and that one can make spiritual advancement from any platform. This is the important concept that is distinct in Krishna consciousness from, say, many other paths of yoga or philosophy. Because, like Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Bhaktisiddhanta broke down these barriers that only Brahmins could be Krishna conscious. Only Brahmins could become spiritually enlightened. And then Srila Prabhupada pushed it further practically, showing that the Westerners and people from every nation can practice Krishna consciousness successfully. So therefore, the tendency is, if we want to improve our spiritual life, let's first change our material situation. And that's wrong. That's the mistake. If it were only that easy, right? it's actually much more difficult to develop devotion or love for Krishna than to just change one's external situation. To devote ourselves to loving Krishna means a thorough internal revolution. We really are going to give up our pursuits of material sense gratification because we're going for a higher taste. And that can be done from just about any external situation.
And in the 20th chapter, Krishna also says that if the practitioner falls down from his path momentarily because of some accident, then instead of spending time in atonement processes, he should simply continue his own process because that will purify him. So that also says the same point, that instead of wasting time here and there trying to earn piety, one should simply continue on in one's natural position, and that will purify him in due course of time. Yeah. So we are doing sadhana bhakti. So sadhana bhakti is a natural position for all of us, because by good fortune or by Krishna's mercy, we are able to accept Krishna as Supreme Personality of God, and we are willing to surrender to Him. Just that we have other attachments, we are trying to cut them down. So it's a very natural process for us to do the sadhana bhakti. Yes, Prabhu.
So say we'll send, should we take, we can we take such a position that, oh, I'm not very advanced, so I'm not in the mood of doing service, so I'll not do service because I'm not at a platform.
I mean, actually, ultimately, one has to be honest. One has to be honest and be sincere. If somebody wants to pretend, then nobody can help such a person. So, sincerity is required. Okay, I will just... there are many interesting shlokas. I'll just say one more in this 21st chapter. Krishna says, Parokshavada Rishaya, Paroksham Mamacha Priyam. Krishna says, the Vedas, divided into three divisions, ultimately reveals the living entity as a pure spirit soul. The Vedic seers and the mantras, however, deal in esoteric terms. And I am also pleased by confidential descriptions. So here Krishna is saying that he likes confidential descriptions. He does not like direct revelation. So that's what Krishna is saying here, that Vedas deal with me in very confidential manner, and I like that. So where can we find such similar description in Bhagavad Gita also, that Krishna is... Yeah.